What do you want to? What do you want to start? Do you want to? You want to do the? Hey,
hey everyone! Like, welcome back to episode 45. Not welcome back. Welcome to. This is the first time anyone's ever seen episode 45. There's no welcoming back. Welcome back to the podcast. The video games are hard. Episode 40. I already set the episode number.
Yep. Episode 45.
Right. I'm Average Trey, along with Sided Williams.
Hi, I'm Sided Williams. Hello.
We got video games to talk about, I guess.
Yeah, it's another week. We're here to talk about video games. I've been streaming video games for like 8 hours today.
Woo! Oh yeah, it was like 8 hours. I caught.
It's tiring, and then I have to then sit and record myself talking to you, which is great.
Wait, weren't we just talking about in an earlier episode you saying I want to try to stream 8 hours straight for some reason?
Yeah. Yeah, and that was like a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I did it. Yeah.
You did it.
I put the goal out there. I was just like, this will be an 8 hour stream. And I streamed for 8 hours and some minutes.
Well, it's not like you haven't done it before. You've done plenty of long streams in the past.
No, it's not out of like, I want to see if I can do it. I wanted to see if I could do it just like sit down and plan that I'm going to do a stream rather than like just fall into doing an 8 hour plus.
So
stream.
You planned on streaming that long today?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I actually did not.
Okay.
So recently I've been playing Darkest Dungeon. So
your hardest game ever, in your opinion.
Yeah. If you listen to last week's pod, by the way, if you listen to all of last week's pod, you're a fucking hero.
Yeah. Apparently Anti-Slicer, longtime viewer of mine, watched the whole thing in one sitting, that he's braver than the Marines.
Yeah,
I couldn't even do that editing it back. So good job.
Yeah, and if you made it to the end, Darkest Dungeon I put as my hardest game because it's just like, it's a game that I've never been able to beat, and I have apparently 150 hours in it.
It's a game that's so hard that Sid plays it on the easiest setting.
You know what? That is actually a thing, like a note to give,
because like, Sid's always the guy who's like, I play on the hardest setting first and work down from there.
You know what? You know what's funny? Apparently, the easiest setting isn't even easier.
Really?
Apparently, according to some people that came into my chat, so I streamed it like the day after we recorded, or like the weekend after we recorded on Saturday, and I was just like, oh, okay, I'm just gonna grind. And some people that knew the game came in and was just like, oh, okay, and tried to help me out, and I'm just like, well, I know stuff. I just,
you know, I played this for 150 hours, right?
Yeah, I still have 150 hours in this game, but like I need to beat it, and they're just
so
like, apparent.
Are easier difficulties just placebo or what?
Apparently radiant difficulty on Darkest Dungeon is like, it's difficult in a different way. Like they try to, there's less grinding, but it's hard to like catch up with like building your town, so like you don't have as much resources to build up your town, so it's weirdly more, it's weirdly difficult in a different way. Apparently.
Okay.
This is me repeating somebody's answer from chat almost a week ago. So, like, something like that. So I was just like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll just continue it here anyway. Like, I guess they intended for Radiant to be somewhat easier in some way. So I'm just going with it. And I've only had two people die. So that's good. And I'm like 8 hours in. But yeah, so I played that. But anyway, my stream today was, I was just like, yesterday I did a Sunshine stream. And I was like, okay, I'll do 96. And then today I was like, I'm going to do 96 again. And then Sunshine sucked.
Oh.
You know when Sunshine just sucks?
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah. So I was just like, nah. And then I did a little bit. And then I just did like 7 hours of other things.
Nice.
You know, or like 6 hours of other things. So it worked off of that. And I don't want to say what specifically I did because we're going to get into like what, like.
In like 30 minutes from now.
Yeah, because I did a speed run of a game that I just beat casually.
Uh-huh.
And I did a co-op speed run, which I haven't done a lot of, like we were talking about like the Stardew thing, but I did a different co-op speed run with Root Hira. And that was the game itself is interesting to like co-op speed run.
It looks very basic.
Hey, it's interesting in a basic kind of way.
It looks more fun to speed run than it is to like play casually.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's just kind of like a little puzzle game sort of. All right.
Yeah, it cool. was like two. Like we did. We played a game called Pets at Work, which is just like one of you is a cat and one of you is a dog. And then you're doing like very simple puzzles. I think we got stumped on one puzzle because it made it was we just had to like flip two pieces. But I, like all in all, it was pretty not complicated. And then we played this game, which we enjoyed more. And then we just kind of went, hey, we're done playing this game and we have no more co-op games to run. You know what we could do? Because we speedrun things, we could speedrun it at the, like, we could just do a co-op speedrun. I'm like, oh, okay. So we did that.
Nice.
But yeah, it's called Kin Duo.
Yeah, is this like a free game?
No, it's like $2. So it's not, Frank, I didn't even know this existed. Apparently over Steam, so I've been playing it on Steam, like Steam Play or like Remote Play. So I don't actually own the game.
Oh.
But if I went to its page, I think I have it like however many. So we played 4 hours today and like a few hours the other, so like 8 hours in it. But I haven't. I don't own it.
Wait. So if someone owns a game, you can just play it with them still without owning it?
Yeah. Apparently, like co-op. Like if it has co-op ability or something, I don't know what the rules are. But yeah, if you have the ability to remote play, only one person has to own it.
That's like the opposite of Netflix making sure everyone has a password.
Yeah.
that's actually kind of genius.
Uh-huh. You know that Netflix is adding ads?
Yeah, I heard about that. I actually canceled my Netflix a couple months ago.
Damn.
Because I wasn't using it whatsoever, and they kept ramping up the price, and I was like, I don't even need this, so.
Yeah, you used it for Madoka Magica? That was all you needed it for?
And then I could have just watched that on like that one free anime site if I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. We don't talk about those.
Not going to say the name because it might not be the most legal thing, but, you know. Anyway, what were you saying?
what were we talking about? Yeah, I streamed a while.
Okay.
I think that, like, in the end, I streamed a while today.
Yeah.
And now I'm sitting here.
Cool. Did you ever say the name?
What have you been up to?
Oh, you said the name of the game. Yeah. It was.
I said Kin Duo.
Kin Duo.
Yeah.
But then, no, what was that story game you were doing? Or the one that Sai
gave okay.
You?
So Psychonauter, a viewer of mine, got me a game called Mundong.
I keep hearing Mundong. It's like Mundong. Okay.
No, it's not Mundong.
Okay, just making sure.
It's Mundong. Mundaun.
Daun. And, all right.
Yeah, and it's like, I actually streamed it today a little bit, so there was a little bit of research done. Apparently, it's like. The language spoken is is it Romansh or Romansh? Romansh, I think.
Roman ranch dressing?
Yeah, Roman ranch dressing was spoken the whole time. And like, it seemed like a real language, and it is a real language. We did a little, because it sounded like Simlish, kind of, but it actually, but I was just like, I played the whole game and it sounded like actual words, and it was. But it's like a pseudo horror game. And the reason I say pseudo horror is because people say that it's horror, but I never felt like that stress.
You're just too badass for horror games. You're not scared of anything.
No, I am. I get genuinely scared. Like when I played Dead Space 1, I was so scared.
Or like Welcome to the Game 2. Did you ever play Welcome to the Game 2?
No, we didn't end up playing.
We just like watching it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. It was scary. That was scary.
Welcome yeah, it was. It was scary. I was too scared to play it, I think.
Well, do you remember what the characters' names were with the masks? Noir?
Noir. There was the assassin, the police.
Police were less scary.
Yeah. And then were there like four things that could kill you or just three?
It was, I think that was it. I think those were the three. And then you just see Moon hiding in the shower for half an hour.
And then like something makes a noise in his mic somehow and he dies for no reason.
Oh, and then he comes out and the assassin knows he's in the shower or in the wardrobe the little, like, for the whole time.
The wardrobe thing, yeah.
Oh, that's so... Dude, month one, Welcome to the Game 2.
Welcome to the Game 2.
What is... Man, what a great stream game just to watch everybody
That's
play.
Like the most active I ever was on Twitch in a while. Like, it was crazy.
It was like Moon, Clint Stevens, XQC before he was big.
Yeah, he was like smaller than Moon and
stuff. Yeah, I have a clip of XQC like playing Welcome to the Game 2, and he got scared by
the door opened
the opposite way he thought, and he was like running into like nothing, and he was just like and then he just like backed away from the door, and it was just a door, yeah, and he just like, walked in.
Nothing was happening. It's just the way the door opened scared him.
It's so funny.
Anyway, get back to Mundong or whatever.
Oh yeah, so I played Mundong, and so it's like every like Let's Play says like, oh, horror. And I'm like, okay. And you can hear it like when you load up the game, you can hear like the bass tones that all horrors have.
So it's just sort of an uneasiness horror, not like a jump scary kind of horror.
I like when I started playing it, I felt like kind of uneasy. And it's just like a little bit of just like the bass tones that are used and stuff, but like nothing was outright scary about it. I didn't feel scared playing it, which is like rare for like those kinds of horror games for me. Like usually I'm just kind of like a little bit more stressed out moving through the environment, but this was easier to go through. I don't even know how to really describe it. I did jump once.
I haven't seen this game. Is it a 2D game, a 3D game? Like, what is it?
It's black and white 3D.
Okay.
And it's like hand drawn. Like,
okay.
The visuals, like if you saw them, everything looks hand drawn, and even like the people look hand drawn, but the people move. It's not like Relicta where you know you're never going to run into a 3D model or anything like that. You immediately run into people. There are people moving in the environment. There are enemies moving in the environment. But it's just like, what somebody said today, it looked like a Half-Life 1 mod.
Hmm.
And it's not, like, I understood what they meant by it.
Wait,
and
it's not a Half-Life 1 mod? I thought it was.
It's not a Half-Life 1 mod.
Okay.
But, like, I totally get what they meant by it. Like, if you saw, like, some of the enemies move, it's just like, oh, that totally tracks. But
wait,
it's like,
are the enemies those weird alien-looking things from Half-Life?
No.
Okay, that's what I was picturing. Like, that's a horror game.
The thing about the enemies in this game is just like there aren't very many of them. They move very rigidly, but like at first they're like kind of spoopy. They're kind of spoopy, but then it's just like they become like kind of trivial.
Okay,
and they're not even trivial. Just like the haystack enemies are interesting, but.
I mean, that is a common thing. Like, a game is generally at its spoopiest when you're new to it.
Yeah.
And then you eventually sort of become accustomed to the way it works and stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, like, all the characters are... Everything's, like... It's like charcoal drawing.
I can picture it, yeah.
And it looks really good. Like, at first, it just kind of... It didn't rub me the wrong way. I don't want to say that, but it just, like... It felt weird to look at.
Yeah.
And then eventually you fall into it and it's just like, oh, this actually looks really cool.
Okay, so what are you trying to accomplish in this game?
What are you trying to accomplish in this game? So it's like pure story. So
there's no game. You're watching a movie. That's all you're doing.
No, you're moving around, but you get like a note from a priest saying that your grandpa died in a fire.
No.
Essentially, like in a burnt down, in his barn burned down, and he's there, and he died. And you don't have to come for the burial, but you go anyway. And it's basically, you like find the body of your grandpa in the wall. Like, I don't even really want to spoil all of it, but
sure,
you find like your grandpa's body, and not everything is as it seems.
Ooh.
And there's like literally. How do I describe this? Your grandpa was in the war with a bunch of people that he lives with at the settlement there.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in order to survive part of the war, they signed a contract with quote unquote the devil, or like in the game, they're called quote unquote old man, but it's like some devilish figure.
Huh.
And they sold the soul. They didn't even sell away their soul. It's just like the payment was one unbaptized soul.
Hmm.
So it's just like they'll pay it soon kind of a thing. And they kind of tricked the like devil figure. And now like it's back for revenge essentially. Okay. And you are the grandson of one of the people at the settlement, and you have to figure out essentially all of this is happening and then figure out how to stop it. And it's like, you like go talk to everybody, and it's very like, very do this, do that, like just point A, point B, point C, point D kind of a thing. And you're picking up collectibles along the way. The collectibles are probably pretty interesting entirely. Like you pick up, like you eat bread and your health goes up. Like there's just like random collectibles in the environment of like bread, which makes your overall health go up. And then you pick up coffee, and then you have to go through this whole rigmarole, which I didn't even hate, of brewing the coffee and, then drinking the coffee in order to make your sanity go up. I think it's sanity, so that you're the fear, that you get from like, the haystack enemies. If the haystack enemies see you, you will like get hurt. Essentially their gaze hurts you. So, if they see you, you're just kind of like three hits and you're done. But
so it's like a stealth thing.
Yeah. It's like you can get hit more with the coffee thing.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like, you'll go insane slower, I think, kind of a deal.
Is there a combat in this game, or are you just like avoiding stuff?
Yes. And it like, I kind of want to go through some of my notes on it. So, they just kind of throw enemies out of nowhere. Like you do like some mundane things. You go to like the burned barn where your grandpa died, and then you go to the church that's like really close to his house, and you talk to the priest there, and then you go to the graveyard and investigate like if his body is still there, and it's not. And then you go back to the church and like confront the priest about it, because they said that they buried your grandpa, but he's not buried and he's not there.
He was sent to the shadow realm.
And it's just like, oh, well, we lied to you. You didn't have to come up here, blah, blah, blah. And then they immediately just like go like, okay, go stay at your grandpa's house. And so like everything's up to this point is kind of like fine. Like at this point in the game, you had one like basically dream where like it affected like your hand or something. You had a dream where you interacted with the old man devilish figure, mm-hmm. but that's it. But like purely in your head to some extent. And then when you're walking home from the church, it's like, oh, go stay at your grandpa's house and like put this candle in the window to ward off evil spirits essentially. And you go from this church to grandpa's house is like very short, but in between here has spawned like four enemies, and they're just like haystack enemies that just kind of, oh, now they're here. And it seems like kind of jarring that they just kind of are there now. Cause you just like walk down a hill, and then, there's this visual of a bunch of hay being lit on fire, and then this essentially haystack like standing up and then starting to walk, and you're just like, what the fuck? And you don't have any weapons at this point too. And you get a pitchfork. There's a pitchfork like on the wall there, and you pick up the pitchfork,
that is,
and then
the obvious weapon of choice against the haystack. Yes.
True. But like, it's a terrible weapon for these haystacks too, because there's no difficulty choice whatsoever. And my first go through, in that area, I think I died like three times, because I'm like, what the hell is going? Like, they look at me and I'm hurt. and I learned that the pitchfork does not take a beating very well. Like, I think you can hit people with it maybe three or four times before it breaks.
Oh, it's Breath of the Wild.
It's Breath of the Wild. So, it was just kind of, you had to stealth your way through it. And then I ended up going through it and not having to kill any of the enemies in order to get to grandpa's house. But like, I have to do super stealth and like trigger them and then move them out of the way and then go around. But I'm just sitting there going like, this is oddly difficult for what seems to be a pretty mundane mundane, a pretty mundane like playthrough so far. This is really interesting. Yeah, it was just like weird. And so, but another thing is collectibles in the environment. So the coffee, you have to go through this rigmarole of like filling this pot with water. Okay. Bringing it to a coffee place, like a coffee. I don't even know what they would call it.
Starbucks. It's not,
oh yeah. You bring it to a Starbucks.
Then
it's just like this big, like cooker. I don't even know what to like. You can open it and you can put wood inside of it and light a match and then close it and then it's cooking. But on top of it, you put the water. And is it just a stove? It's like an old timey stove.
Yeah, I guess so.
And you put the thing of water on top of it and put the coffee in there. And then you have to wait for it all to like cook. So, and then you drink it and then you get a little bit more like fear reduction.
Is it worth the effort?
Yeah, it takes a really long time in comparison to like, just like picking up something in the environment that gives like, oh, you got a thing. Instead, it's just like, okay, you have to pick up a thing of coffee. You have to have a piece of wood. You have to have matches on you. You have to make sure you have matches. You have to go fill this thing. And I didn't even hate doing it because it just like, it was interesting to do that.
It's like a weird crafting mechanic out of nowhere.
Yeah. And like, I got used to doing that and it got, I don't know, it got like soothing in a way to do. Just like, oh, I found a coffee. Okay, so I'm preparing all this, blah, 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 blah. And then less fear. But another thing is, so really early on, the game starts giving you bullets. And I'm just like, oh, bullets. Okay, so eventually I'll get a gun. So I started thinking about it. I'm like, in real life, if I find a bullet, I don't think I'll eventually find a gun.
Yeah, it's one of those like video gamey things.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I found a cart.
Yeah, I found ammo somewhere, but it's a video game, so like there has to be some way to shoot this ammo at some point.
Yeah, eventually I'll be able to shoot a gun. So, but like the gun doesn't show up until like way later.
That's so weird. Huh.
So I started picking up bullets like real early on, and I'm just like, okay, when the fuck is this gun gonna show up? And eventually it does. And the gun sets the haystacks on fire, which is interesting. But also there's like soldiers involved because again, war, there was like war flashbacks and the war was like on that mountain specifically as well. But now there's like a ski chalet at the top, but it's all like abandoned.
This sounds pretty horror-y to me just listening to it.
Yeah. There's one jump scare.
Like see, horror game. All you need is one. That's the quota.
There was one moment where it got me. Like I was just like in a basement picking up the collectible that the game wanted me to. I was on my way out. And like before that, they had set up like, oh, there's this like mysterious monster on the top of this hill. And I'm just like, oh, okay, I'll just avoid it. And like it was within like very close to where I was. And I just like it left my brain. I'm like, oh, I found the thing and I'm about to leave. And then just like jump scare. I'm like, fuck. And it like I actually yelped and it got me. But other than that,
So you picked up a thing, turned around, and it was right there?
No, it wasn't right there. It was like you're coming up from downstairs. Like you get the thing at the very end of like a basically an S-shaped basement.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're on your way back out. And then when you start going up the stairs, it like falls on top of you essentially.
Damn.
And it's just like, oh, and it just comes out of nowhere. But yeah, bullets an inevitable rifle. There's like weird moments in this game where like there's a puzzle with like slabs of meat and music notes. So there's four slabs of meat and okay. then there's somebody hanging dead by a noose. All right?
Oh, this is why you wanted to know how to spell noose.
Yes.
You were like, and Trey, how do I spell noose? In? I don't know.
N. You start it with an N. I know that. But you have to like hit the meat in a certain order. But like if you hit the wrong note, the dead body hanging by a noose will shake their head.
Oh, it's like Hangman.
Sure.
It's like a fucked up version of Hangman.
Just like I hit the wrong meat to start. I didn't even like try to do the puzzle because there was just like, oh, the window is like unfogged in certain areas. So like this will be the order that you should do them in. And I'm sitting there going like, okay. And I hit one piece of meat and the hanging guy with the noose just kind of shook his head. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do this until he just doesn't shake his head. And I hit the right one and he's just like, nothing. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to hit. I think the code was 14231. This was the code. And so I hit the first one and nothing happened. And I was just like, oh, okay. Or he didn't shake his head. So I went to 4 and hit it because it's just like the opposite side. Makes sense.
Yep.
And then nothing happened. I'm like, okay, so I'm right so far. And then I went to number 2 because it's just like, okay, the furthest away from that one without being numbered 1 again, easy. Hit that, was perfect. And then I hit 3 and then it worked. And I'm like, oh, and then I'll yell at the last one. And I was wrong. And I was like, fuck.
Oh, wait, so it's literally just trial and error?
No, there's like the answer on the window. It's like... It's like 4 slots high and 5 long.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, there's ash filling the room, but it's unfogged in certain specific spots. So it's just like, if you could figure it out, it's like there's 4 slots high. There's 4 pieces of meat. There's 5 slots long. So there's 5 notes.
Hmm.
And it's just like, okay, so 1, 4, 2, 3, 1. And you do it. And then they spit out a key. The hanging dead guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, so I got that. And
the hanging dead like guy that shakes his head at you.
Yeah, but it's just like, I'm not sitting there going like, it's the art style doesn't really scream. Maybe that's it. Like the art style didn't really condone to horror, but it was like still good looking.
Yeah, what I'm visualizing in my head is probably creepier than the game actually looks.
Probably.
I'm like, this sounds pretty spooky to me, but no.
For sure. But like, so like haystack enemies, there's floating like beekeepers. I'll just let that sit. Yeah, there's floating beekeepers.
Floating beekeepers, yep.
Yeah, and then they just, when they see you, the music tone, but like you don't get hurt by their sight.
They unleash the bees on you.
They literally unleash the bees.
Oh my God.
You are correct. And, but like then you eventually get like a bee suit, so it's fine. Like you get a bee suit like pretty quick,
mm-hmm.
so you can just put on the bee suit and it's like they send the bees at you and then you're okay. But like the weird confusing noose thing is actually why I wrote the noose. There's a cabin just randomly when I'm like on my way back that has not even a collectible in it. It's just like a little piece of notepaper that you can put in your journal that really doesn't affect anything, I don't think, in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an achievement, who knows? But I went into this cabin. There's one collectible. I went forward. There's a noose in that cabin that I didn't even realize was there. But like, why would I even acknowledge that there's a noose there? I walked forward like... I got somebody put me in the noose and then I was just hanging in a noose. Like there was like it fades to black and then you're hanging in this cabin like for however long, just uh-huh. kind of struggling. And then you get cut down.
Oh my God.
But then everything's back to, like everything's normal, but it's just like this random one-off cabin.
Huh?
And I don't like, I wasn't, I was sitting there going like, what the hell was that? Like, I don't.
Was that like a dream?
No, it just like,
happens.
You walk in and then you're just like attached to this noose. It doesn't even like somebody puts you there. I don't really understand it. But I don't know. There's like interesting story beats in this game entirely. There's like a painter that is like on the side of the quote unquote old man. And, like when you paint things, they become real, but they don't really use that mechanic too much. Like you make a bridge and he sets a barn on fire and that's kind of it.
That always kind of annoys me when there's an interesting mechanic in a game potentially that like barely ever gets used. It's like that could have been used for a lot more, I think.
Yeah, but it's not like a mechanic. It's just kind of like a story.
Part of the story.
Yeah, part of it was just like, oh, his paintings come to life and he sets the barn on fire to kill your grandpa. And he built a bridge by painting it and then like erased the middle of it so you couldn't cross it.
Ooh.
And like you repaint it to make it cross. And then by doing that, you prove that you have the ability to paint and build. I don't really... There's parts of this game that I'm just like, okay. There's also a goat head that you have in your inventory at some point. This is the worst game to try to explain. You know?
I think you're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, it's But I enjoyed playing through it. My initial playthrough was 7 hours.
Okay, so it's a pretty short game, but it's like mostly story and like. So you said like it kept you interested throughout.
Oh, the first two sessions I played for 20 minutes and could quit. Like I played for 20 minutes and then I was just like, eh. And then I played another 20 minutes and I was like, eh. And then the third session I was like, oh, okay, I'm in.
So why did Psychonauter buy this for you? Just on a whim?
I don't really know. He thought that I might like it, and you know what? I ended up liking it.
Hey, there we go.
So it was like a cool little casual game to play. Mm-hmm. There are first person shooter mechanics because you eventually do get a rifle, but you don't have very many bullets.
It would be strange if they gave you bullets and there's just no gun in the game.
Yeah, it would be kind of nuts. But yeah, I think I ended the game with like 2 remaining bullets when I had, I don't know, 14 total. So I didn't use that many bullets entirely. I know I like the whole time after I got the rifle, I'm like, okay, I gotta be like safe with my bullets. I need to not YOLO any of this. And I didn't. There's a bunch of soldiers later on. There's like the haystack enemies like I was talking about. But like the story beats are interesting. It's mostly just a story-based game. Like it's nothing more than that. Mm-hmm. And for the meme, I beat it this morning. Like early this morning, I wanted to beat it for the podcast so I could talk about it.
And then you speedrun it.
And yeah. And so I started my stream today and I ended up doing a speedrun of it. And I looked at the speedrun.com times and it was like 1 hour, 2 minutes is the record. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I had like a 7 hour like casual playthrough. It took me 2.5 hours to like still beat it.
Hmm.
And because like, I think I started it 1.5 weeks ago. So like the first maybe hour of my casual playthrough, I barely remembered. And like going through it really quick, it felt weird doing it. Cause it's just like for a store, like a pure story based game, trying to speedrun it.
Could you skip all the cutscenes?
Well, there isn't really cutscenes to, I don't think you can.
So it's just like all immersive. Like there's no, this is a cutscene. This is gameplay. It sort of like melds together.
Yeah, to that extent. It's like, I guess it's Assassin's Creed to some extent, except for like the walk and talk parts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you have to like walk and the conversation's happening at the same time. But you can mash through all the text as fast as possible. But the cutscenes, I don't know if you can really skip them. I don't think you can, because the speedrun is still like 1 hour, 2. And that's probably people like putting some time into it.
Probably like no glitches in it. That you know of?
That I know of. Like, obviously, I have 10 hours in it. Like, I don't know. That's the rule, right? 10 hours?
Yep.
Yeah, 10 hours and you're an expert in something. But, yeah.
Oh, wait, so no, I think it was 10,000. Whoops.
Oh, it was 10,000?
Shoot, yeah. I think I mixed that up.
Honest mistake, really.
You know, that always kind of annoy me. Like, you've heard that thing before, right? Where it's like, it takes 10,000 hours to master any skill.
Yeah.
That's what they always say. I feel like, first of all, it's highly dependent on the skill we're talking about. And, like, second of all, like, why not 8,000 hours? Like, do the final 2,000 really make you into that much more of a master? I don't know. It just seems kind of arbitrary.
Did the person that said it put 10,000 hours into being proverbial, you know?
Ooh.
Is he an expert in Proverbs? Maybe, probably not.
I think that whole saying comes from Tiger Woods, who supposedly started playing golf, like, right out the womb he was playing golf.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, he has 10,000 hours in it, and he's Tiger Woods. And there you go. There's your proof.
I don't think that's where it comes from.
But I mean, he's like a shining example of that philosophy, but it's like, I mean, I know speedrunning is not the same as like mastering guitar or something, but you can master a pretty difficult speedrun in like a fraction of that time.
Yeah.
Not just learning, I'm talking like fucking world record potential. You know what I'm saying?
Like Kenduo.
Yes, you you got the world record in Kenduo in like a little, not even that much time.
In like a half hour.
we can get into that later, but I kind of want to like talk about something now. You've been talking hella.
No, I get you. But I played Mundana. It was good.
Cool. I enjoyed it. What'd you rate it out of 10?
Fuck. I think I would put it in like 8.5, 9. Ooh. Like I had a good time with it. I don't think it like really
better than Vanquish.
I think it's well better made than Vanquish.
Right. I mean, it's such a short game. It's like going to be more well-crafted.
Yeah. Like I think story wise, it's better for sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I like it doesn't do very like horror very well, but like, I don't know for what it like intends to do. I think it does it like pretty bang on.
Cool. Well, yeah. I guess I may as well just straight up say I PB'd in Sunshine.
Yay, we knew this. I knew this.
Woo! I guess I PB'd twice, but like the second one was more, a lot more like a real recent. PB, I guess.
Recent?
More recent yeah. as well. Yeah, the second one was more recent than the first one. Wow.
I'm just glad that you PB'd, like the, right after you PB'd, I was just like, I'm glad you did because then.
Because content. Like,
It's optimal podcastage so that we don't have to talk about you PBing again next week.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It was a 114.42. It was a 11 second improvement on my first PB of a 114.53. The math checks out.
Yep.
And I'm especially proud of this run because there was no, with the exception of like sort of PD Piranha, there was no exceptional RNG in the whole run. Like, no early cycle. Oh, yeah. I had. Not only one extra in King Boo, but I attempted cycle skips and failed them. And I threw a fruit and I got the stupid, like, throwing a fruit between two rings and it bounces to the side kind of deal.
Oh, okay.
I got that thing, which cost me like 6 seconds for no fucking reason.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, a bad King Boo split, a decent enough Manta, but not great Manta. So there was no, like, specific RNG carry. It was definitely, like, my most skillful run I've ever done.
Yeah.
I just had like very, very little time loss on like any skill-based thing.
It seemed very, you talked about it after you finished the run, but like even as the run was going, I'm like, he doesn't seem very stressed out. And it's just like, hey, he's going into like Noki minus however many. Like,
yeah, I was like minus 8 or 9 going into Noki.
Yeah, I was going to say -7. I would have guessed -7. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like, yeah, this is like still doable. And I'm sitting there looking at the splits. I'm like, huh. He doesn't seem like riled up, you know?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I was more nervous about a month ago when I was on similar pace because it was the first time I had that like experience being on that pace, I guess.
Yeah.
And I've had like a couple of runs between then and that run where I was even more ahead going into Noki. Mm-hmm. Like that one where I was like -30 after Noki 6, no early cycle. That would have been like the run of my life. But then Noki 7 happened, I calf cursed it, and then I died in Corona. Oh no. So there was that, but I actually was pretty nervous that run. Like, I'm never not nervous on that pace. Sure. I feel like if I cover it up fairly well, then like psychologically I'd play better, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I realized something that like, it's always kind of cliche to be like, oh, just take a deep breath. But taking a deep breath before doing a hard level actually weirdly does help. Because I was taking like a deep breath, like, oh, okay, let's do it. And then I got like a perfect Noki 6. I was like, I guess the deep breath thing really works. Okay. At least in that one instant.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then Bowser didn't decide to fuck me up. So I won.
Yeah.
Because there was another run where I was like -15 in Bowser. And then I got that like death I never had in my whole life before. So that was fun.
Yeah. I last podcast we were talking about that run and how like it was the first time in a while where I'm just like head in my hands.
Yeah.
And but this one I was just like, oh, he got it. Like,
it's cool.
What's funny is that I was like, for the other run I was just like, oh, I feel so bad, but for this one I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like I mean, this felt kind of overdue in a way. It's just like,
yeah,
it's just so as you get more better times, I know I'm so eloquent.
Or better.
Just clutching out the ending of runs is so much more difficult because there's just less margin for error.
Yeah.
And it's that much harder to even be on that pace in the first place. So.
And you're 10th now.
10th place? Well, on leaderboards. 11th in the world, technically, Raffle. Well, yeah. But I mean,
sure.
10th of what really matters, am I right?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's what we're saying,
but anyway,
as a collective.
Yeah, I'm going to keep going, though, even though, like, this run's a very good showcase of what I'm capable of because there was no early cycle or anything. But yep. I want to push into like 1420 ish at least, and then whatever I get better than that would be like little bonus points. Mm-hmm. Maybe even 113 if I'm like insane one day. You never know. Maybe I just whip out my whatever energy I had in my sub 3 run and just get like a 1 minute PB. That'd be nice. But
you did upload it to your YouTube channel.
Yeah, so I didn't upload my 114.53 because it was kind of minuscule and like also arguably not even as good as my other PB because it was more luck based.
Yeah.
But then this run I was like, okay, I'm actually pretty proud of this one. I'll upload it. And then I was pleasantly surprised by the comments. I was expecting a third of them to be like, hey, where's like an actual video? But no, like pretty much every comment was like, hey, congrats, man. Sick run, man. Yeah. For some reason, I have this weird thing in my mind where it's like, if I don't upload a real like high effort piece of content, people are going to be like, what the fuck, man? But then I realized, wait, people don't really care. They're just like, oh, cool. Congrats.
Hey, more content to some extent.
Yeah,
why?
It's technically content, even though it's just a thing that I streamed. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, there was also the mixture of, oh my God, you're playing the game again? Dude, that's so sick. It's like, yeah, I've been streaming it for many months now.
Yeah, I did peruse your comments a little bit and saw a few of those. I'm just like, yeah, well, they're just like, what do you call them? YouTube frogs or whatever.
YouTube frogs.
Yeah, that's the...
I don't think I've ever used that term before.
I'm stealing more Ludwig terminology.
Oh, YouTube frogs.
Yeah, where they're
just
because like,
they it's something to do with like jumping from one site to another, or
no, they just don't. They stay on the YouTube site.
But when I hear frog, I think like leaping from one thing to another.
Where does
frog come from?
They're just stuck. Frogs are stuck. They're stuck in YouTube. They're stuck in the YouTubes.
Why not like YouTube turtle?
You know what? Yeah, they're YouTube turtles.
YouTube turtles.
And I'm a Twitch frog because I jump from both, but I'm more on Twitch than I am on YouTube. But yeah, they're just in the YouTube area.
I mean, that's just kind of expected
just
because
stuff.
It's not even that necessarily. It's more like I literally have more followers or whatever on YouTube than Twitch. So like maybe the people who only know me on YouTube also go on Twitch. They just don't watch me on Twitch. So it's like...
Sure.
I expect that. So,
but yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
I like everybody. I like that you did one run, got a 114.42, and then it was just like, yeah, I'm gonna do King Boo for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I'm gonna treat myself by not doing more runs because I want to end on a high note and do King Boo. So,
dude, ending on a high note is so good to do.
Well, the thing is, ending on King Boo, it always ends on a neutral note, technically.
Yeah,
but like, I'd rather not just like do a couple more runs, be like, oh, hey, I didn't improve it again. Wow. Surprise. Okay.
Like, oh, that was a great investment of more time today.
Yeah. It's something about PBing. It's like, I don't really want to do more runs really. Except that one time, like one day, like I got that super low 115. Then my next couple runs, I got my first 114. That was pretty nuts.
Nice.
Not sure how I pulled that one off, but. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, I switched my 115 counter to a 114 counter, which is at 3 now. Ooh. So,
oh yeah, I was just about to say that it's 3.
Finally leveled up. Hopefully it doesn't take me forever to get a fourth one, which it might, but yeah.
So you haven't had a 114 yet that isn't a PB?
No, that's true. I need There's to get my first non-PB 114, and then the universe will be in order again or something.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to mention the fact, hey, so your GDQ run didn't get accepted.
I got rejected.
Yeah. So now the plan is, because we talked about it a couple weeks ago, now we're all going to Europe.
Yep. Well.
That's it.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
That's the plan. We're all going to Europe. We're finally going to meet each other, IRL.
Yeah, luckily I actually checked. My passport doesn't expire until like I want to say like a year from now.
Okay.
I renewed it like maybe 9 years ago and it lasts for 10 years. So perfect.
The classic 10 year. I still have to like follow through with all my passport stuff, which will be fine. But like the options for it, it's just like, oh, you can have 5 years for this amount of money, or you can have a 10 year one for $50 more. It's like, yeah, I'm going to, instead of paying another $120, in order to get a new passport. I'm going to, like, they just kind of sucker you in. It's just like, just get the 10. Just get the 10-year.
Hey, you know, it worked out for me perfectly because I'm actually going to use a passport for the first time my whole life.
Ooh, your whole life?
With the assumption nothing conflicting comes up. Yeah, there's always that assumption. But I'm going to plan on doing it. You know, first time going to Europe, it should be hype.
Oh, but yeah, congrats.
Yep. I'm trying to think of, like, what else there's to say. Like, when's the schedule for ESA announced?
The 7th is when. I don't know if they're going to announce everything. Wait, no, yeah. I think it's May 7th. Like,
that's 2 days from this recording.
So yeah, before this podcast goes up, there should be, like, to some extent, like, confirmations at least going out that, like, people's runs are in.
So you said that you and Peaches submitted?
I didn't know about Peaches. Like, I guess Peaches submitted something. I think there's been Bingo submitted. I submitted 96, and I know Samu submitted 120.
I think that your 96 will get in, and I'm going to commentate it. It's going to be a grand old time.
Yay. Well, that's hopeful thinking. Just put that into the ether.
Yep.
The shitty thing about that is that I'd have to play 96 shots, or then I'd have to play Sunshine.
But you love playing Sunshine. You played it, like, for so many years.
It ebbs and flows, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know it.
You know, it's funny. Like, I was, after my PB, I'm like, yeah, I love this game. After my stream yesterday, I'm like, you know, this game is all right.
Yeah. Like, yesterday I did, like, a half decent run of 96, like, to halfway through. And then it just went to garbage and I got, like, a 236. And I'm like, ugh, this is gross. And, or, like, it didn't even feel bad. Like, by the end, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm down. But then, like, after an hour playing today, I'm like, I really don't want to play this game.
It's so funny, like, how quickly I come off of, like, the high of PBing. It's just like, oh, yeah, I did some more runs and didn't PB. I remember, back to the grind. All right, here we go.
Shouldn't it be like, I feel like in sports, it's just like, oh, we won the championship. I just want to play basketball for, like, I'm running off of that for months. But I'm just sitting there going, like, with Sunshine, I'm just like, oh, I just PB'd. Fuck this game.
Like, although it depends on, like, if it's, like, a really fucking good PB, it's like, yeah, dude, I'm fucking sick. But I mean, it wasn't like my PB wasn't great enough to be like, okay, I can quit now. It's like, I'm going to keep going. So
I hate that I can keep going. Like, just take a week off, you know?
Nah, dude, I got to strike while the iron's hot. I'm playing hot right now.
Oh, you're playing hot.
If I take a week off, I'm going to be back to cold iron.
Cold, calm, and collected?
Yeah, and then not playing while the iron's hot, or whatever this analogy is trying to say.
Yeah, this analogy's sick. But yeah, like, other than Mundan, like, what have I been doing lately? Like, I've been picking at other games. Like, I played a little bit of Darkest Dungeon, just started that. Hey, this is something we can bond over, right?
Seriously?
So, a little bit. Okay. I played Steven Sausage Roll.
Oh, yeah, we can bond over that, yeah.
Yeah, so we did our top 10. Your Steven Sausage Roll is on your top 10.
It's my second hardest game I ever played.
So I was just like, I was looking at it, and it was just like one of those times where I was watching a stream and not doing anything. I'm like, I could stare at sausage puzzles. And, do you ever feel this with Steven Sausage Roll? So I think I'm near the end of the second area. And I still have those two puzzles that I'm just like, I have no idea. Like, the Great Sausage Tower is one of them.
You have to triumph over the Great Sausage Tower. I believe in you.
That, like, it's so daunting. I don't think it's as hard as it seems, but just, like, I don't know how it wants me to do it.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you just got to sort of figure out a few tricks, and then, because it's kind of like a repetitive thing, you realize, so.
And then there's another one that I'm just like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing here. But, Did you ever feel this with Steven Sausage Roll, where you do a puzzle or you stare at a puzzle for a while and you're just like, I don't know how to do this. And then you do the puzzle eventually and you're just like, I still learned nothing. You ever feel that?
I try to remember. I feel like I'd say for 70% of Steven Sausage Roll puzzles, as KO would say, I felt like I brained my way through it. And, like, your I actually, brain? like used my brain, like, figured it out logically. Like, for very few puzzles in the game, I was just sort of, Like, I would start out kind of making some guesses, of course. But yeah. Eventually the pieces would come together and I'd be like, oh, this is, they intend me to do this, this, and this. Okay, I got it now.
The most common thing I have with Steven Sausage Roll right now, I'm going to actually say the words. With Steven Sausage Roll. All right. The most common occurrence so far is I play it for like, I don't know, 5 minutes. I leave the level and then I come back to the level later and then do it first try.
Yeah, that sometimes happens.
But I'm just like, or like one of the puzzles, I think I took like a half an hour to be like, what? I have no idea. And then I turned off the game. And then the next day I turned it on. I'm like, what the fuck did I have an issue with?
Yeah.
You know? Like, you turn it on and you're just, you look at this puzzle. I'm like, oh, it's this. And I'm just like, what the hell was I doing yesterday that was so terrible? Like, how was I just so off so hard in this puzzle game? But yeah, I've been picking my way through it. I think I'm like 5 hours in or like more, like six or seven. Who knows?
It's a hard game to play for a long period of time in a row.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
It's definitely a game I would play through it like, my longest sessions were like maybe 3 hours tops.
Yeah.
If I was on a roll.
Yeah. But I think I was right.
Thank you.
I think I was right when you were talking about it initially. It's like, it sounds like a game or it looks like a game that I would just kind of put on one monitor while I'm doing something else or like watching a stream.
Yeah. Like, it was like very sporadic sessions for me because it just drives you insane after a while.
Yeah, you just stare at it, and you're just like, oh, I'm going to try walking around, and then just, like, moving this little guy fucking sucks. And then you go through it, and you're just – sometimes you just leave it there, and you're just like, huh.
I think part of it is that it's just kind of an ugly game to look at.
Well
– like, the graphics are not great. It's just like,
I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't know. It's
– but it – yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Very jarring, contrasting colors and stuff.
Yeah. But yeah,
it's not the easiest game on the eyes.
My goal, what was your initial, how many hours did you have in it when you beat it? You said 38 or something?
I want to say it was like 38 or something.
Okay. So my goal is to beat it before your hour comes up, but I don't know.
Ooh, it's a competition now.
In my head, it might be a competition, but at the same time, if I lose, I'll never acknowledge this statement ever again.
I feel like it's a bad idea because there were like at least a dozen times in my playthrough, I thought, this is it. I'm stuck. I can't solve this. I got to give up now. And then if you have that like competition thought in the back of your head,
yeah,
it's gonna further piss you off and be like, now Trey's going to win this competition now. Trey can't beat me. This sucks. Ah.
It's like, oh, I'm stuck. Oh, I'm losing time.
Like, I feel like worrying about your play time is going to make you more impatient. So
I need to take a screen cap, put it in paint, and then turn off the game.
Although I feel like it's easier when you're like moving the shit around.
No, I'm just going to stare at a picture and just know
like,
how everything
works.
Work
through it in your head.
Yeah.
And you're like... just like watch a walkthrough at that point. Like, see, Trey, 2 hours. I'm so smart.
Ooh, I'm so sick. Look at my Mundan playthrough. My Mundan speedrun. 2.5 hours, get destroyed.
And I'm like, wow, mine's 0 hours because I haven't even played it. Get fucked.
No. Don't say that to me. But, yeah.
Anyways, I played Inscription.
Woo. Yeah. So what's funny about Inscription is that haven't you been playing it since like the last time we recorded now?
Yeah,
like
my
for guest list.
It's a fairly short game. Like I did my playthrough, it was like 13 hours or so.
Oh, Mundan's shorter.
Yeah, not as short as Mundan, just really bad at Inscription. I don't know.
Maybe.
But have you seen this game before?
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces. I know like the shadowy figure at the end of the table. Yeah. I know like the room that you periodically talk about, but I've seen like bits and pieces.
So when I went into this game, I'm pretty sure I played this game because KO recommended it at some point. It was like on my bucket list.
Yeah.
And I literally went into it. I had absolutely zero idea it was even a card game. I didn't know what this game even was going into it. Mm-hmm. Just totally 100% blind. Okay, the one thing, this pisses me off. The description for the game on Steam kind of spoiled the subversion for me. Because this is probably the most subversive game I've ever played in my entire life. Because it makes you believe, you know, when the beginning section, it's like a roguelike point and click escape room. Like, you feel like this is the game. This is what the game is. These are the rules. It's a card game. It's an escape room. Sure. But then as it goes on, it drastically changes its game appearance and feel, yet feels familiar at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
Like, all the characters and the elements feel sort of consistent throughout, yet the game changes drastically, to not spoil it, as much as possible. And actually, the gameplay I'm showing on the video portion of the podcast is Inscription. However, it's basically spoiler-free because this is like a post-game thing where you can like play through what is like the first part of the game in more of a challenge fashion, where you have like a self-imposed challenge like, oh, I'll never get the fish hook item in this playthrough going through this roguelike thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's not even roguelike. It's just like, oh, do you survive this playthrough or not? Well, let's find out. But anyway, it starts out feeling roguelike, though, because like you sort of go through a little bit. There's sort of a, I guess, scripted death to like show to you, oh, you can walk around the room. That's kind of cool, right? Oh, you thought it was just a card game, but you can like walk around this room. Oh, my God. And as it goes on, like, you eventually, like, you, there's little things that come up where you can sort of get stronger cards, more access to the bone currency. The bones are their money. You know how it goes. The bones are their money. And then, like, basically little things help you out. You can, like, get things in the room to help you out. It has, like, a very spooky atmosphere the whole time. You're never sure if you can, like, fully trust this guy. Some of your cards are talking to you. They have, like the cards know each other. It's kind of weird. And then you eventually beat this guy. And the whole game changes. Like, you already know immediately from the get-go, like, something is sort of uncanny, kind of off about this game. Because the first time you play it, the new game option is grayed out. You have to hit continue.
Oh.
Like, the first time, I was like, wait, is my game, like, glitched? Like, I have to go to continue? I just opened this game for the first time. What the fuck? But then you actually unlock new game, like, 5 hours into your playthrough. And then the game, the genre of game, it becomes more of like a, I don't even want to say, like, you just got to experience it yourself. It becomes a totally different looking game with the same base card game and card game rules that you sort of already know on top of it. And the characters sort of, they're all in there in like a different way as you go through it. And basically, I'm kind of mad because there's like this sort of, you know what an ARG is?
Yes, an augmented reality game.
Or like, is it alternate or augmented reality game? One of those two.
I think of it as augmented, but
anyway, yeah. So there's also like an ARG aspect of this game, where if you're like a Turbo Omega, like super sleuth, kind of looking at the code kind of guy, there's this whole other like cryptography. You can look into the code of the game, find some bullshit. That's all like optional, obviously. I didn't do that. But there's an ARG involving a fake YouTuber named the Lucky Carter. And he has like this, when you beat the initial roguelike section, you beat this guy, the spooky invisible face guy. The first thing it does is like it loads in to his video camera and you see like 8 different clips. Some of them are just like static. One of them is like him in a green screen like, hey, it's Lucky Carter here. I'm going to open up some of these packs. Let's see if we get the fucking, the rare... Blue Eyes White Dragon. It's not Yu-Gi-Oh.
I was about to say Holo Charizard.
Yeah. And then basically you're going through and the game, it shifts from being a card game to more of a figuring out the mystery of like what happens to this YouTuber based on this footage and what happens to you in the game itself.
Oh.
And it's pretty intriguing. Like, unlike, you know, I played Everhood and I pretty much ragged on it for like trying to be Undertale and being quirky for the sake of being quirky, not focusing enough on being fun. Well, this game, it's definitely quirky, but its quirkiness feels much more justified in the context of the game that it is.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm definitely enjoying the quirkiness here, which is really cool. And there's also like one final section after you beat the total shift in appearance of the game initially, where it sort of goes back to the styling of that initial card game area where it's like 3D and stuff, mm-hmm. except you're fighting, I don't want to spoil like what character it is, but like a computer character, like a robot essentially, mm-hmm. and the card game, it's the same card game, but instead of four spaces, there's five spaces you can play your card. And the rules sort of change subtly, but it still feels familiar. And then as you go through it, basically there's like four different bosses. Each one has their own gimmick. They're kind of like easy, but like really gimmicky and fun bosses. One of them is like, I'm going to open up, like select a file. You actually give the game access to looking at your files on your PC, which is kind of sus. Uh-huh. I wasn't worried though, because I was like, well, if this game actually harmed your files, it would probably not be allowed on Steam. So like, I'm not too worried.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to suss you out and be like, oh my God, it's looking at my files. That's kind of weird. And you actually like, to fight back against this guy, he's like, select the biggest file you can and let's measure it up on this scale to see how much damage it does to me. And I guess like the more gigs the file is, the more damage it does to him. It's kind of unique.
What file did you pick?
Just like some big video file.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was just like, just a recorded VOD.
It's like, 120 PB. Here we go.
Yeah.
And actually, I was kind of messing around. I was like, what if I put inscription.exe in here? And I think he actually had like a unique dialogue. I forgot what it was. He's like, ooh, very interesting file there or something. It's just kind of funny. And actually, so there was a moment, one of the boss fights, I was crying with laughter. It was like the funniest thing that ever happened to me in a video game. So one of the gimmicks, each one has its own gimmick. That one was like the looking at your PC files. There's one that actually like connects to the internet. And I was like, okay, what's going to happen here? Like when it starts out, he has like some cards that have like random Google images on them. Like, okay, I guess it goes to Google images. He's like, here's a picture of a goat. And it's just like some realistic goat on the card. Yeah. I'm like, okay, you know, it's kind of funny. And then he's like, can I like take a look at your friends and start like your internet? I'm like, okay, sure, I guess, whatever. And the card he plays, he puts down two cards. There's a Cephalon card.
No!
And an iced windowsill card. And it's just Cephalon's Steam profile picture is like the sad hatless Mario sitting in the rain. So it's just like the sad Mario plushie.
At the bus stop?
Yeah, at the bus stop. It says Cephalon, and that's his card. And I was like, I was losing it. It was so fucking funny. And, you know, each card has its own, they call them sigils or like effects, basically. It was kind of funny. The ice windowsill card had the annoying sigil.
No.
Which basically it has the effect where a card across from it does more damage, but it's also like good in itself. I forget what it does exactly. It's just called annoying. It's like, oh, it's calling it ice annoying. Haha. Anyway, each of these four bosses has their own, like, one is your PC files, one is its internet connection, and then it like there's like a twist at the end, like, oh, thanks, you know what like the great transcendence is? It was me making this game because you gave me access to all this stuff, haha. And then he ends up dying, because I'm not going to spoil it again. The ending is really weird and quirky. There's a not so subtle Yu-Gi-Oh! Parody, I'm not even joking. That makes this is the second game in a row I've played that has a Yu-Gi-Oh! Parody at some point. Because fucking Bug Fables had Bug Universe Yugimoto in it, which was also pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would, if you're into like the whole strategic card deck building thing, you would definitely enjoy this game. If you're not, I don't know if you really would so much. Mm-hmm. I was pretty into it. It was pretty fun to me. I guess my biggest criticism, although the story is interesting, is that it definitely front loads its funness. Like the most interesting and fun gameplay is definitely in that part where it's like the spooky face, like the face you can't see, the like walking around the room type stuff.
Uh-huh.
As it goes on, the gameplay is not really as fun. It's also like much easier, but it's the gameplay takes sort of a backseat to the story at that point. But yeah, I mean the parts that are the most fun are pretty fun. So I would definitely recommend this one if you're into that quirky kind of card game kind of bullshit. So yeah,
dope.
Pretty dope game.
I am interested in playing it. Yeah. How much was it? Do you know?
I think it was $15 or $20 or so.
Okay. All right.
I would say it's worth it. Although you could just like wait for a sale, probably. Like it's it's probably on sale right now because I bought it full price. So.
Have you moved on to anything else since? Or wait. Out of 10. You did it to me. I have to do it to you.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I would give it... gameplay, I would give it a 7.5.
Sure.
Story-ness, I would give it a 8.6.
8.6?
For an overall combined rating of 8.05, if that math checks out.
Uh-huh.
There you go. I don't know. It was pretty good. It was pretty fun.
Have you moved on to anything else?
Yes, actually, something a little more classic, some old school gaming, if you will.
Oh yeah.
I actually just started. I'm about like 3 or 4 hours into it. The OG Metal Gear Solid.
Oh yeah, I did see on your Discord that you were playing it.
Wait, it showed up on there?
Yeah, it showed up on Discord.
Oh, I think that I didn't even know this. My I'm using the emulator called DuckStation. So I guess DuckStation has its own emulator or Discord support, I guess.
Yeah, I saw it randomly. I'm like, "Oh, I guess he's like he can't be playing on a console."
No. Imagine if playing on a PS1 and it just shows up on Discord.
He's like, "Oh yeah, Trey's playing this." I was like, "What? How the fuck?"
Yeah, I didn't even know it was showing out there. That's pretty cool. Huh.
Yeah, I did see that. I totally forgotten though, like you saying it. I was just like, oh yeah, I did see that the other day.
Yeah, I was talking about it like on stream a little bit, and Skinner Koopa, apparently she lives and dies by DuckStation. It's a really good emulator, I guess.
Nice.
But I was like, yeah, you know, on my bucket list, I see Metal Gear on there. I kind of want to see if I can get into that series a little bit, see what's up with it.
The first one?
The very first.
Damn.
I believe 1998, I want to say.
How rigid does it feel?
Actually, let me see when it came out, release year.
Because like the other day you were saying, I thought you might, I totally forgot that you were saying before the podcast that you were playing a classic game, but I thought you might have been playing the other day you said like, oh, this game is on sale, the KO, like down.
That game's not classic. Rain World.
Yeah, Rain World. I thought you might be playing that, but I totally forgot the classic thing that you said.
I did buy Rain World. It was like 50% off. I got it for like $10. So
nice.
But yeah, Metal Gear Solid came out in September 1998.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, despite its age, it has some of the most like cinematic cutscenes and some of the best voice acting I've ever seen in a video game. It's like insane, dude.
Oh damn. Yeah.
The voice acting holds up so well. And sure, it's a bit rough to look at. The faces are very pixelated, clearly. Like it's not gonna look like fucking Final Fantasy VII looks like shit, and it's a classic. But like, even then, it's pretty. Again, the emulator upscaling could be helping out a bit as well. Mm-hmm. It probably looks rougher on the actual console, but it looks good enough. Like I can see what's going on. Like the graphics, the cutscenes get a little bit wibbly and wobbly sometimes, and like warping around. I don't know if that's like an emulator thing or just in the game, but other than that, it looks pretty good. And it's like, I'm like dying a lot in this game, man. I don't know if I'm just like not very good or it's actually like kind of a tough game. Because if you get caught, like it's very punishing. I guess that's the point, because like it's supposed to be a stealth game. Like it's not going to be like, oh, you get caught. It's like not really a threat. So you can just fight him anyway. Like it's a couple of hits and you're dead. So like you really got to think about if you want to shoot someone or like just stealth your way through it.
Yeah.
And I guess on hard, I'm playing on normal mode. On harder difficulties, the minimap radar, which shows you enemies walking around, I guess, isn't even there. Which, dude, I couldn't even imagine, because the camera angle you're given, unless you like go into sort of the unwieldy first person mode and stuff, you don't really know what's coming up.
Yeah.
So unless you know this game super well, like hard mode must be like actually pretty hard.
Dude, that reminds me of The Last of Us hard mode, like grounded, if you unlock it. Do you have this ability in like lower difficulties that you can, not a radar like Metal Gear Solid, but you can like, you basically like put your hand to the ground and like, you, well, like
you, in like, my, you, it, you sense the ground's vibrations.
Well, you just like hear through walls and it like, and it's just like, you like access this fifth dimension like hearing ability that you can
it's
see
like that
the
one. What's that one character in Avatar The Last Airbender that's like blind? I forget her name.
I don't know.
She can like feel the vibrations around and know where stuff is even though she's blind.
Yeah, exactly that.
It's where like it's just her, like, I forget her name.
you just like hold a button and you're just like, based on the sounds, you know exactly where the enemies are, basically, and you could just see through walls. But like grounded, they just remove that. So you're just like, I'm not like just this transcendent being
anymore.
I'm not
anymore. Like a god anymore. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get a radar. The radar is like, I find myself looking at the radar like 60% of the time sometimes. It's so useful.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do without it. But yeah, the voice acting is stellar. And like, I'm realizing when people do their own Solid Snake impressions, they're not exaggerating. He really does talk like that. He's like, tell me about Metal Gear or I will...
Metal Gear.
He actually does say it like that. They weren't joking. And I pretty much, what I've played through so far is pretty much like what the Metal... Have you seen Metal Gear Awesome 1 and 2?
No.
The super old school, like we're talking 2004 Ego Raptor probably.
Oh damn.
Some of his oldest flash animations. He had like the Awesome series, like Awesome the Hedgehog or The Legend of Awesome and stuff.
I might have seen it, but like years ago.
Yeah,
but
this was like super duper old school. I was basically playing through like the scenes of Metal Gear Awesome 1 and 2 and be like, oh, it's that guy. Oh yeah, it's that guy. I get this joke now. That's cool. Like you meet the engineer guy who's like a huge anime nerd and he like starts peeing everywhere. It's like, oh, it's like the scene where he starts peeing on the guy's face in Metal Gear Awesome. Yeah. And dude, like the characters have just like so much charm and it's like, it's insane for a game from 98. It's actually like blowing my mind. Like the cutscenes are very long, but they're like interesting and the voice acting is great. So it's like, yeah, sick. I can see why it's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
I get like the gameplay, it's a bit rough and it is pretty, as you were saying, it's kind of stiff. Control-wise, there's some getting used to. Like you have to get used to maneuvering around hallways. There's like a mechanic where if you control stick into a wall and hold it, you like sidle against it. It's like in Wind Waker or something.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that way, like it gives you a better camera angle. You can see like a guard coming. You're like pressed up against the wall. But it's kind of awkward because you go into that thing and then like regardless of the direction you're pressing, like into the wall remains, like let's say the wall is like a leftward wall and you're holding right to press into it. As you're pressed into it and the camera angle shifts to you like facing the camera, holding right is still the direction to like face, just like press against the wall. It doesn't like, it doesn't shift to up like you think it would.
Yeah.
So it's like, to sidle left and right, you're actually moving up and down, even though it's like the camera doesn't think it's like that, essentially.
Uh-huh.
If I'm explaining that well whatsoever. But yeah, there is something getting used to with like the sort of stiff controls, but like other than that, and like the gun shooting is a little bit awkward. It has that like that old school not really giving a fuck kind of difficulty where it's like, if you can't do it, I mean, you gotta keep trying until you do it. Like there's no pity system or anything. So, like, you gotta, like, fucking just do the thing until you do it, you know? So
You have to win. You have to
win the game. And I've done, like, two bosses so far. I beat, like, Revolver Ocelot, who has, like, a gun that can shoot bullets that ricochet off walls into you. It's kind of annoying.
Uh-huh.
And it took me, like, 5 tries to beat him. He had to, like, he just kept running in a circle. It was, like, annoying trying to catch up with him and, like, actually accurately aim at him and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had to just like figure out this weird AI manipulation where he runs up this way, I run backwards, trick him into going the other way, then just like take a pot shot at him and like rinse and repeat.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, I just like couldn't even catch up to him. And then like some other guy, you have to, it's like this metallic ninja who turns out to be Gray Fox or I don't know. And then like someone that Snake knew previously, and he's like, more, you must keep beating me up more. You have to fist fight him, like shooting him with a gun, he just like reflects it with his katana or whatever. And it's kind of annoying though, because you got to punch him like 30 or 40 times. It like takes so long. And each phase, he gets progressively more dodgy and, like, annoying to hit.
Yeah.
And he can easily kill you unless you have enough rations to go through to restore your health. But yeah, like, weirdly difficult game, but, like, great cutscenes, and I'm really digging the story, so.
And you're only 3 hours in.
Nuclear war story going on.
Yeah. And you're only 3 hours in.
I'm like four hours in, I'd say. So
4 hours. It is interesting that you were talking about how Bug Fables had the Yu-Gi-Oh parody, and then the Inscription also had the Yu-Gi-Oh parody.
Yeah.
So Inscription it had the file reading. You have this pattern of picking a game that's going to have, or with Metal Gear Solid, it's going to have. You haven't run into it yet. I don't know if it's Metal Gear Solid 1 or just 1 in the series.
Oh, like some Psycho Mantis shit.
Yeah. Where
see,
it's gonna
I've heard about that
card.
In my chat. Someone was asking, "How is the Psycho Mantis fight going to work?" And I'm here like, "I don't even know what that fight is." I know it has like some fourth wall breaking shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me. One other thing that really impressed me. It has I don't even know, like, adaptive dialogue, I guess you could call it. So on my way entering this base or whatever, I ended up fucking up the stealth. I had to kill 3 guards because I'm amazing at video games.
Fair.
I intended to just like get through on Steam, but I was like, oh, fuck, they saw me. I got to kill them now. I killed 3 guards entering, like, exactly 3. A cutscene plays as I enter where a guy's like, have you seen this guy? Like, there's been an infiltration. This guy's a madman. He killed like 3 of our guards. I'm like, holy shit. The voice dialogue changed because of how many guards I killed? That's nuts. Like, that's not even, like, a thing most modern games do nowadays. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's
if I killed 2 guards, would it have said 2 guards? Like, what the fuck?
it knew that I had to kill 3 guards?
I think I'm just, like, more mind-blown because of how old the game looks and it's doing this. It's, like, it's nuts.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't know of current games that... Yeah, I don't know of any current games that do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just, like, it specifically has a voice line depicting how many guards you killed in a certain area. No.
Yeah, then I'm just wondering, like, if I didn't kill anyone, would they even know that I'm here? It's like, maybe I got to do more playthroughs to figure that out. I don't know.
Ooh, maybe that's where we get the 1,000 hours of Metal Gear Solid instead of Skyrim.
Maybe. And then I got to do hard mode where I have no radar, and I'm like, shit, I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh,
Were you saying with Psycho Mantis or whatever? Did you know?
Yeah, the, So, like, Yu-Gi-Oh, well, like, I don't even really want to spoil you on the fight. Do you know what the Psycho Mantis fight is?
I know that there's a joke where he's like, you like to play Castlevania or something. Maybe that was in Metal Gear Awesome. I don't know. It knows what games you've played or something.
Yeah, it reads your memory card.
Yeah, so maybe it's going to be like, you're pirating the game.
but it's interesting how, like, you play Bug Fables, just like, okay, Yu-Gi-Oh reference. Inscription's also... a Yu-Gi-Oh reference, but then Inscription has the reading your files or your friends list on Steam.
And
then you sidestep to Metal Gear Solid. Now Metal Gear Solid is going to be like, oh, I'm going to try to read your memory card. Like, it's that kind of fourth wall kind of thing. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, I've been sort of picking these games at random, maybe like subliminally though.
Yeah.
I'm having like a loose connection between them, like Yu-Gi-Oh reference to Yu-Gi-Oh reference, fourth wall break to fourth wall break.
Yeah.
And then I'll go Metal Gear Solid, whatever that has, to Control. Finally play Control.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Maybe one day.
But maybe someday.
Like you were talking about how the fact that it's from 1998 is impressive.
Yeah.
Like, with all this stuff.
It's only two years later than 64.
Like, it kind of reminds me of the like, it's not as old, like, Relicta being impressed by, like, the story or whatever, and just how... much effort is put into like the environment or and stuff, and then actually Mundan to some extent has weirdly implemented there is a car that you drive in Mundan where it's just like, I don't think any of this was like specifically necessary, but they put in the effort to but like it's not a 1998 equivalent, but I was thinking about it being like, oh yeah, well they didn't have to put this car to drive or these posters that you, like this, the car actually warps to you as well. So I'm just sitting there going like, oh, this really was not necessary. And you put a lot more effort into it. But then if you go back to 1998, it's like, you definitely didn't have to put in this effort.
Like, you didn't have to change the guards' dialogue depending on how many guards I killed.
Yeah. It's just like, and oh, like, they got some of us.
There's just like, for how pixelated it looks, there's so much attention to detail. There's like posters on the wall and stuff that have like various graphics on them. And then there's like full motion video of just footage of nukes going off and stuff when they're talking about like Metal Gear is to fuel nuclear war because it can launch a nuke anywhere in the world or something.
But yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to play more of it and see where that goes. So
yeah, it's cool how much you're jumping around.
Yep.
I don't know what I'm going to be playing over the next bit. I know we're thinking of some sort of pod for next Tuesday. We're going to have to figure that out. But
yeah, like
some sort of guest related pod. We're going to have to notify them. But yeah, I truthfully have nothing else to talk about.
I guess I have one more thing on Inscription. So the postgame in Inscription is really good because it's really, it goes back to like the roots of what I thought was the most fun part of the game, which was that first part with the going up the tree diagram of like getting new cards and then fighting this guy. And it's like very cinematic feeling and stuff.
Yeah.
You can just go through that again, except there's like various challenges. Like you can have fewer, like just add like a various random elements of challenge to it. It's like a new game plus little go through essentially each time you do it.
Yeah.
And there's no like story involved. Like there's no cards talking to you and stuff. It's all just like a straightforward gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just showing footage of that. And one thing that it keeps track of, it has like stats and stuff. If you're like really getting into it, like, oh, like number of this kind of card played or like number of cards drawn or there's like various stats. And one of them is called misplays. Ooh. And I'm just wondering, like, what qualifies as a misplay? Like, if I don't make the most optimal decision possible in one given moment, is that considered a misplay? And I got an achievement called, like, Rookie Mistakes or something for doing 10 misplays in one go-through. So I'm like, am I this bad? Like, and I'm like, what? Isn't misplay, like, okay, sometimes you can, like, sort of measure it, like, okay, in this situation, I could have done this rather than this. That would have been better. But maybe... Hey, maybe one man's misplay is another man's play style. Am I right? One man's misplay is another man's play style. Maybe my play style is just, well, you consider a misplay. Like, what the fuck is
yeah.
this?
well, it's like in Melee, right? Where they're just yeah. like, oh, you become so good that like doing the scrub option is actually good now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that. It's like, what if, yeah. like, I know it's like an AI program to do a certain thing each time. But like, let's say it's a human opponent. What if what you're calling a misplay is like actually a big brain bluff or something?
I'm just catching you off guard with my misplays, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. Like I could play the better card here, but like maybe I want to save that card because, you know, yeah. fucking maybe there is like a very obvious answer to what a misplay is considered in this game and I'm just stupid. But I saw maybe. That I'm just like, huh, like they're ranking me or something? Like, what the fuck? It just feels kind
of
weird.
You know what? Your description of Inscription.
Yes.
Has intrigued me enough that I will probably get it, and I will, by next guest list, I will tell you what a misplay is. Or I'll help. I will either add to the confusion or detract from it.
You know, I am really glad that I didn't really get too much into spoiler territory in this game because it's definitely a game that like
yeah
you if you're going in blind you will not see a lot of the stuff that happens coming, like it really comes out of left field.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad that you didn't spoil it.
One
thing, so I thought of one thing before we wrap up.
Sure.
What do you think of co-op speedruns?
I think they can be really fun. I mean, I've done two-player one controller myself. Yeah. Sunshine. So I'm no stranger to co-op runs myself, even as unnatural of a speed run that kind of thing is.
Yeah.
I think that they're fun. It's just hard to take them too seriously because like both party members of the speed run have to be down to practice whenever you practice.
Sure.
And it's just simply like one person's going to be more invested than the other. And really like the less invested person is the bottleneck or like the rate determining factor of like how optimized your run's going to get.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think it's cool. as long as like the person who wants to take it more seriously understands the other guy's like, I don't really want to play it anymore. So
sure.
But like, I'm good.
But also to some extent, like there's the, like if you're doing a solo speed run, you can self-motivate or whatever. If,
yeah.
With co-op speed runs, you can't really like,
you gotta motivate the other person.
Pardon me?
You gotta motivate the other person.
Well, you don't wanna make it unfun.
Yeah. You gotta keep it fun the whole way.
Yeah, you can't like... So the reason I'm asking this is because I brought up at the beginning of the podcast we were doing Kin Duo runs with just like this $2 game, Rudhira and I.
Yeah, it's like and super short. It looks like Terraria, but it's not Terraria.
Like, we've done... we did like a day of Stardew Valley co-op runs, and we did Kin Duo twice now. We did two like sessions of it. We did two full runs, I guess, mm-hmm. last week. And now we've done 4 more hours of it and cut the time down 10 minutes. But it's never been unfun. Like we were working together, and like whenever we each other made mistakes, it's just kind of like time save for next run or whatever. But I don't want that to like become like, oh fuck, you fucked up.
Yeah. You know? As soon as it's like you're getting mad, if you're getting mad at the other person for messing up, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
It's probably we're probably good on this.
Like the game that I'm thinking of, like for co-op, is you ever see the what is it, the Borderlands speedruns at GDQs?
I have never watched one because I never really played those games, but yeah, I guess they would be co-op, yeah.
Like they're so coordinated and the communication is like abundant, mm-hmm. that it doesn't look, I don't want to say fun, but it looks satisfying, you know,
to have
that much coordination with not just your gameplay, but with another person and their gameplay.
That's actually part of why I picked up Four Swords Adventures, because I always thought it would be cool to have like a 4-player super coordinated 4-sword speedrun of some kind.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's ever really happened. Like there's been 4-player speedruns, but like never really too seriously, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Because getting 4 people to like coordinate that much, that must be crazy. Yeah.
Especially on like a somewhat niche fashion. Well, not even on a niche game, but like in a niche fashion.
Yeah.
With like what, Game Boy? Do you need the Game Boy Advance link cable and stuff?
Dude, it is really hard to get 4 players set up in that game. You need, I think you just need 3 Game Boy Advances, maybe 4. I could be wrong.
Only 3.
Let's say that you need 4 Game Boy Advances. You need 4 Game Boy Advance to GameCube adapters, a GameCube itself or a Wii, the game itself, and there's possibly something else that I'm forgetting, but yeah, you need a lot of stuff. So.
God, it's so much easier to do a Kin Duo speedrun with somebody
else.
Yeah,
you just need a 2 PCs and
one person needs to own the game, and then you play remote play. That's crazy.
Yeah, needless to say, I've never actually done co-op Four Swords Adventure. I never had the link adapter to GameCube to Game Boy Advance growing up. So,
yeah,
but yeah, I think co-op is cool. It's kind of like, it is like only really fun in that honeymoon phase of like just first starting a game out, and it's like it's always fun then. So I don't know.
Sure, but I don't know. I feel like depending on who you find to do it with, might affect that. Like if you don't care
that much, if the other person messes up, and it's like, I don't know, you need to have like that right vibe to where it's fun to take it seriously together.
Well, maybe it's to some extent the same vibe that we had with pre-patch Back 4 Blood.
Yeah.
And the only reason I say pre-patch is because we said pre-patch so many times during the top 10 pod.
Well, because pre-patch was like a different game than post-patch. Yeah. It was actually hard.
But it's just like going through Back 4 Blood. Like, it is co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And like going through Back 4 Blood, we were making mistakes or whatever, and somebody died or somebody had to be picked up or whatever, but we never like lost the vibe.
Yeah, the vibe was always pretty strong.
Like, we're still singing Ace of Base for 4 hours on end, just I saw the sign and opened up my eyes, and just different lyric sets to that.
I feel like I just have like too many trust issues to take co-op runs that seriously, because I'm like, what if I'm Sid and Rudhira playing this game where you're like a rock guy pushing rocks and a lightning guy lighting up shit and you can like boost around.
Yeah.
And you're like on the final level and the other person who's the lightning guy misses a crucial dash and you're just like, well, fuck. And then you're and it's like, I don't want my run to die at the hands of someone else, you know?
Oh, you don't want to not be in control of that.
Yeah, I like having full control over the destiny of a run. It's also like way less stressful to do it single player, because if you're co-op, you're like, I don't want to let this guy down.
Oh, so, imagine like...
It's like multifaceted like that.
Well, like, I guess you could imagine it where it's just like two players, one controller with Sunshine. But like, imagine you taking a co-op game as seriously as you do Sunshine 90%.
Yeah, like that would never work because it's
That'd
like...
That'd be insane.
I hate myself enough playing solo Sunshine. I couldn't imagine not like, only losing runs to myself, but like also just someone else could just mess it up randomly. It's like
going through random splits in Sunshine, you're just like, oh, I lost like 7 seconds. And just like 7 seconds is... like if you think about it, 1, 2, like 7 seconds is nothing.
Yeah, like I PB'd by 11 seconds in Sunshine. That's quite a bit, like in any percent terms, though. Like that's pretty significant.
It's like, oh, what a jump. But like, yeah.
I jumped up like 5 places with that one PB.
in real cases, 11 seconds is absolutely nothing. But in a co-op setting, like if somebody else lost that 11 seconds, wouldn't that be insane? You're just like, oh. That was out of my control. Like, not even, like, co-op RNG.
But, I mean, you just got to not take it so seriously.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've been having a lot of fun with it. That's why I'm bringing it up, because we did some Kunduo today, and it was a good time to be had. There's one person that does the solo run of the game where you control both characters.
That sounds quite a bit more tough.
Yeah, you swap back and forth, and we beat them. But like, obviously, we're 2 players.
Oh yeah, so, like you have a huge advantage.
Yeah, we have a massive advantage. We can play at the same time. But I don't know. It's just been a nice change of pace, you know, where it's just like going into Sunshine and like doing 96 or any percent and just being like, well, I left that level plus 20 seconds. And you know what? 20 seconds is massive, but it's not like in speedrunning terms, it's massive. But like in literally sitting here for 20 seconds, we've been sitting here for what, an hour and a half, like not that much time overall. But then like in a co-op run, it's just so much nicer to just sit there and be like, you know what? If this run dies, we're having a good time.
Yeah.
You know,
and like instead of ADEF and I, we were having a good time doing 2P1C. The most frustrating thing was that like my internet connection wasn't as good when we were doing it.
Yeah.
And we were doing it over Parsec because we weren't like in person practicing it. And sometimes my internet would get kind of choppy and like disconnect for a few seconds. And then like on his end, he wouldn't even see what's going on for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And there was some frustration with that. But like now I have amazing internet, that wouldn't happen anymore.
Woo.
But yeah, like I think that like 2P1C Sunshine would be fun up until like you could probably get like sub 130, not too much trouble. We just never like got to that point because we're like, yeah, we're gonna see if GDQ accepts it. If it does, we'll do more seriously, like improve our run some more.
Yeah.
2P1C Sunshine, it's a fun challenge. Perhaps only if you're already like familiar with the game and run the game yourself. Mm-hmm. But still pretty fun. So
yeah, I just wanted to get your take on co-op speedruns, because like I thought of 2P1C, but I don't really like it's just a different I don't want to say vibe again. I don't want to say the word vibe again.
You can be like as hard on yourself as you want to be, but it's like, how hard could I be on this other person who's fucking the run up for me?
Sure. You know? Or like you be
before,
the person
before it's like not fun anymore.
Yeah, or how much do you want to be like mad at yourself, and then you're just sitting there going like, well, I feel bad.
Am I gonna feel like shit if I mess this up? Is this guy gonna make me feel like shit? It's like,
yeah, you just have to find the right person and then activate the vibes.
But like co-op runs, if done well, are super impressive because of like,
oh yeah,
all the preparation and the coordination involved. It's insane.
It's just like, okay, so when I do that, like even for like frame perfect tricks, or not even frame perfect tricks, like tricks that you have to do at the same time, it's just like, oh, I'm coordinated on this basically other level with this other person. It's like, we have to time these two things at the same time in order to like skip whatever the fuck, like in this hypothetical.
Yeah. It really feels like you're combining brains for a moment.
Yeah.
And like, it becomes easier than you would anticipate, because you almost, based on like the actions you're taking, you sort of, I don't know, you just like get this feeling like it's even more intertwined in 2P1C when you're controlling the same entity.
For sure.
Of like, you almost just subliminally know how to move and how this person's gonna, how this person will like position the camera at this point. Like, you just sort of know what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And it's sort of bizarre. And you don't even get that like in what you're doing, where it's like two separate entities.
Yeah.
Like, you do a little bit, but it's like, it's just different. It's crazy.
Well, it like for like the only time that I really feel that during the Kenduo runs was just like the last two levels, where we're both doing things at the exact same time.
And yeah, and it's like a little more intense, because it's like actually, yeah, like a somewhat challenging level.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but like otherwise it's just kind of like, okay, you do this and then you do this and then you do this and you do this.
Yeah, don't get crushed. But, don't push the blocks too close to each other. Don't. Yeah.
But then like the last two levels, it's just like, it feels so, and I said this, I'm saying the word slick a lot lately, but it just feels so smooth and slick. It just, like, I did my thing, they did their thing, and then we end, we're on the B platform going to the end.
Yeah, the B platforms. Yeah, there was moments where Rudhira, if she wanted to, she could just like flip a switch and then crush you with the B platform. And for, I don't know why. Maybe it's my trust issues.
Why?
Every time you were going under that B platform, like, she could just kill him right now if she wanted to. Like, I feel like I'm kind of scared for Sid right now for some reason.
That's insane.
Like, I don't think she would ever do that, but it's like, she could if she wanted to.
Yeah, I don't have that part of my brain at all.
Then again, it's the same way where it's like, if you're watching a solo run, it's like, he could just die at any moment now. Like, if he just messes up. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but even if she did that, I'd be sitting there, I'd be howling laughing.
Yeah, like, it's like, is she going to do it as like a joke? She could. I'm just saying, the option's there.
She could do it as a joke.
Anyway, I think that's about, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm glad that we talked about Kenduo a little bit, and the co-op speedruns. But yeah, thanks for listening. This has been episode 45 of Video Games Are Hard. We're on the final stretch of podcastage of season
Indeed.
Two. We got a couple more guest pods, and then what we have planned for episode 50, and then we'll be receding into the void, the OBS
we
void.
We will die.
Well, we're going to be receding back into the OBS void of podcastage.
And then we might see Bo Burnham in there.
Who knows? Maybe he's inside the OBS void. But for now, we're just going to say Spotify, Google Play, Video Games Are Hard,
Google
over
Podcast.
There. Google Podcast. I said Google Play again.
It's fine. I you know, in this co-op podcast, I will forgive you for that mistake.
Thanks, man. Well, yeah.
But don't do it again.
It's good. It's good that you do that. Sid and Trey on YouTube, and hey, episode 46, just around the corner, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.